Good morning and welcome. I will call to order the Minnesota House Commerce Committee for the morning of Thursday, February 19th, 2026. A quorum is present on this Minnesota We Love You Day weather-wise. And so the first thing that we have on our agenda today is the approval of the minutes from yesterday. And Representative Buck, as a new member, yeah, and as the your first meeting with the committee, have you had a chance to review the minutes, and would you be willing to move those for us this morning?
Sure, I did actually read them last night.
So. Look at that. How did we do?
You did okay. You did okay. For being state, you guys did all right. I move to approve the minutes from Tuesday's meeting.
February 18th,
didn't you know what day?
Very good. Did like a pro. Good job. All those in favor of adopting the minutes from February 18th, as moved by Representative Buck and presented to the committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The first bill that we are going to have on the agenda, because of weather, we're kind of bouncing around a little bit. We'll get everybody in here. We have not yet closed the cabin door, so we are still in good shape. What we're going to do is we're going to do House File 3389, and I will move that before the committee. It will be laid over, and this is a bill relating to insurance continuing education here in the state of Minnesota. I know with that very big introduction of that Representative Davids is now fully tuned in to this particular bill. So with that, I'm going to pass the gavel to Vice Chair Perryman, and I will move to the testifiers table to move from here. But again, House File 3389 is before the committee. Representative Perryman.
Good morning, everyone. We do have the bill before us of HF 3389, and we have the bill before us from Representative O'Driscoll. Two-year bill, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commerce Committee. It's always a privilege to be able to be in front of this committee. I have a certain affinity for this committee, so thank you for being here this morning. In the state of Minnesota, regulated industries such as appraisal, insurance, real estate, and others have licensing requirements and proficiency requirements by passing a state examination. In addition to that, passing an exam and getting a real estate or insurance or appraisal license or regulatory license in the state of Minnesota, practitioners are required as well to take continuing education to keep that license. And there are various different ways that folks can obtain that continuing education. And one of the things, as we're looking to maybe try to modernize the way industries move, is considering this morning allowing those insurance producers, those folks who sell us life insurance, health insurance, property and casualty insurance for our home and automobiles, to, if they are serving on a board that, again, advances the issues of the industry and they're taking time out of their practice like they would with continuing education classes, to receive some portion of continuing education credit for the work that they do on those particular committees that they might get assigned to. We're going to work with the department on it. As you said, the bill is going to be laid over. Very quickly, within the way that the insurance continuing education works, of the total requirement for the two-year cycle, you are required to take at least 50% of that away from company-sponsored. So your insurance company may sponsor continuing education, but 50% of that education has to be taken away from, at least 50% away from company-sponsored training that the department would approve for education. Inside that second 50%, there are different things that can be done. As I mentioned, a company may sponsor continuing education. This is where we're planning on nesting this idea is into that other 50% of things that folks might be able to do away from their, that would be away from the company or away from the requirements under the continuing education requirement. So I didn't quite say that quite as smooth as I wanted to, but so they will be able to take some of their credit in that other bucket is where we're looking at nesting this. No one would be allowed to be able to take their entire continuing education credits. by being on or serving on some type of professional board related or adjunct to the industry. So, Madam Chair, with that as a setup, I do have one testifier from the industry who is a proponent of this. I'd like to call her forward if I could and have her introduce herself and provide her testimony to the committee. Madam Chair.
Please, Representative Ojusko, please bring your testifier forward.
Thank you.
Welcome to our committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Thank you. Lori, L-O-R-I, Gubash.
Please continue.
G-U-B-A-S-H. Easier than it sounds. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity today to testify in support of HF 3389. Again, my name is Lori Gubash, and I am a licensed and insurance agent and a certified LTC agent and the current president of NAFA Minnesota. Our association represents insurance and financial professionals across the state who serve individuals, families, and small businesses in their efforts to achieve financial stability. NAFA Minnesota strongly supports HF 3389 because it recognizes the real and meaningful education that occurs when insurance professionals actively participate in professional associations. As an insurance professional, I can attest that serving on association boards and committees requires significant time studying regulatory changes, ethical responsibilities, product developments, and consumer protection standards. These roles are not ceremonial. They involve substantial work that directly improves our ability to serve Minnesota consumers responsibly and competently. Professional associations like NAFA Minnesota play a critical role in promoting ethical conduct and accountability, educating members on regulatory changes and compliance, sharing best practices that protect consumers, and developing industry leaders committed to professionalism. HF 3389 appropriately limits this credit to 4 hours per licensing period and requires verification and oversight, ensuring the integrity of Minnesota's continuing education system remains strong. Importantly, the bill preserves the separate ethics education requirement. This legislation will ultimately benefit consumers. Better educated, more engaged insurance professionals are better equipped to help Minnesotans make informed decisions about insurance and risk management. By encouraging professional engagement, HF 3389 strengthens both the insurance profession and consumer protection in Minnesota. On behalf of NAFA Minnesota and the clients we serve, I respectfully urge you to support HF 3389. And then in your packets, you should have letters of support from the other three insurance associations that we have in our group. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Are there any other public public who wishes to testify? Any else in the public that would like to testify? Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And we'll proceed then to the members' questions. Do we have any members with questions? Representative Dossett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, can you explain the process of what you do to vet these courses to make sure that, or what the process looks like to vet these courses? Just give a brief description of that.
Sure.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dotseff. What happens is the Department of Commerce has an application process, and so this would be identified as to where this meeting took place, what was the subject matter in this meeting, how often did you attend the meetings, what was your role in those meetings, and the like. And we wanted to get this bill before the committee, and the folks who are the advocates for this particular legislation are working for the department. I do not believe the department's going to testify on it. They remain neutral right now, but do want to work outside of the committee with the stakeholders on this to try to come to a more formalized process and an agreement on it. So the department is not opposed to it from what I'm hearing, although they can certainly and should speak for themselves.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ojusko. Any other members that would like to speak? Seeing none, no further discussion.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me?
Very quickly, and I will use this as my closing comment. This bill will be laid over to see if there are any issues between the department and the advocates on this. And if necessary, we'll bring back an amendment to clean up that language to in an attempt to be able to accomplish what the bill's spirit and intent is.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. And with that, Representative Driscoll renews his motion that House File 3389 be laid over for possible inclusion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Oh,
aye.
Sorry. Aye. I guess we're not doing that. Sorry about that. I'm rusty at this still.
It's still pre-season.
So it'll be laid over. Gavel.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, the next bill that is before the committee is a bill that we had heard a few years ago, and we never had a gambling bill that we were able to put this bill in. And so I promised Representative Harder that this session we will give her a hearing on a very interesting bill that has to do with social cards and social card networks. And so with that, here comes Representative Harder right now to the testifying table. I will move House File 357, House File 357, before the committee, and this again will be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill under consideration at some point in the future by the committee. And so with that, Representative Harder, your bill is before the committee. I do not see any amendments to the bill, so it looks like we are in good shape. Representative Harder, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll and members, for hearing this very important bill. Like the Chair said, I am not the original author of the bill. That was former Representative Brian Farr. And after he retired, I asked him, is there anything that you wanted to get across the finish line that didn't happen? He said, oh, yes, there is something, and here is the bill. And the bill just adds the game Haston Pfeiffer to the list of social skill games. The game is very popular in the area that I represent. And the game would be similar to Euchre, which is already on the list. And to avoid confusion of the games, if we could add Haston Pfeiffer to the list, that would greatly benefit those who enjoy the game and be a great solution. And that is the bill.
Representative Harder, do you have any testifiers today?
No, I do not have any testifiers.
Okay. And again, just in the way of background, as Representative Harder said, regionally these games are known as different things, and they certainly want to be compliant in her region. And they call it the name of, I believe she called it Haston Pfeiffer, to be able to be compliant and not have any issues or problems. And so she's simply asking for that game that's very similar to, you said, what, Euchre?
Similar to Euchre, yes.
Yeah.
Apparently, the Euchre is important to those in the northern part of the state, and Haston Pfeiffer is important to those that live in the southern part of the state. But very similar games.
Representative Harder, I can tell you it's very popular in my area under the name Euchre as well.
Excellent.
So, members, questions for Representative Harder? Representative Cazizuatun?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was with former Representative Brian Farr earlier this week. He was the initial author of this bill. And he has asked me to tell everyone that this bill has his full-throated support. It was initially a constituent bill of his, as I understand it. Thank you.
Representative Cadiz-Otun, if you're interested in co-authoring that bill, I suspect that Representative Harder would be happy to have you on that bill. Members, other questions? Is there anyone from the public who wishes to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 357? Anyone wishing to testify? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Harder will give you the final word before we lay the bill over.
Well, thank you very much for hearing this important bill. It's got to be the shortest bill of the session, and I just appreciate you allowing me to come today to talk about the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder, and next time you come, I hope the weather is nicer.
I agree. Thank you.
And with that, I will lay over House File 357 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill under consideration for this committee. Thank you. The next three bills are kind of the theme for the day, which is looking at some AI-related issues. And as staff and the chairs sat down and kind of looked at what can we accomplish this year. We felt that there was maybe some things that we could do in the AI world and in the technology world, as it has strong bipartisan support to make sure that we're doing the right things. And so we have three bills with some different topics that the committee is going to hear today. And then we'll do some more work on those kinds of topics in the future, and there may be a couple of other bills that are coming that deal with this topic. But today we thought would be a good day to go ahead and get started with that. And I see Representative Bakeberg is here. So, Representative Bakeberg, I will ask you to move toward the testifying table, sir. And the and I will also move before the committee House File 1434. And we're going to, again, lay this over for more work on the topic by the committee. And so with that, House File 1434 is before the committee. Representative Bakeberg, there is an amendment that I have in our packets to this bill. Is that an author's amendment to your bill?
Yeah, I would move that amendment.
Okay. I will move that for you because you're not a part of the committee.
You're right.
I just want to double check to make sure that is the amendment. So I will move the A3 amendment for Representative Bakeberg to get the bill in the order that he wants on House File 1434. Discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, hearing none. All those in favor of adopting the A3 amendment to get the bill in the order that the author wishes, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Bakeberg, to your bill as amended, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, members, for getting here on this snowy morning. It was a bit of an interesting drive from my house this morning, but thank you. My name is Ben Bakeberg. I have the privilege to represent the communities of Prior Lake, Jordan, Shakopee, and the surrounding townships. House File 1434 requires digital pornography websites to use age verification to ensure that users trying to access that content or those websites are adults. In the past, if a young person wanted to purchase pornographic magazines or movies, a cashier would check their identification and would stop the purchase if the person wasn't an adult. The simple goal of House File 1434 is to bring that same level of protection in the physical world to the digital world where most of this material is consumed today. We know from research that kids stumble onto pornography accidentally, and a quarter of the kids who stumble onto the content find it on dedicated sites. Legislative action is needed to protect kids because without the statutory requirement and protections, the websites are not regulating themselves. Today you'll hear about age verification, how it works, and how laws similar to House File 1434 have passed in 25 other states, and how the Supreme Court recently affirmed our role as the state legislature to be able to regulate this issue. Thank you to each of the members. If any of you have further questions, I'm happy to answer them. But thank you to each of the members and the stakeholders that have reached out to offer your feedback and your perspective on this bill. We have and will continue to work together to get the right language to balance the data privacy pieces that are critically important while reaching the goal of protecting kids. Again, the bottom line goal of this bill is to protect children. It's important to ensure that the data collected by the entity conducting the age verification is deleted after the check, and with my author's amendment, cannot be sold to a third party. The data also cannot be transferred except as required to comply with the law. A survey just last week by Common Sense Media found that 84%, let that sink in, 84% of adults believe that adult or pornography websites should require age verification to make sure that it's only adults accessing those sites. This bill is a positive step in the right direction to provide guardrails to protect children. And I've been encouraged by the good bipartisan work both here in the House and in the Senate. With that, I'd love to move to testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. And I believe the first testifier that you have is Rebecca Delahunt. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll, Chair Cagle, and members. My name is Rebecca Delahunt, and I work as Director of Public Policy with Minnesota Family Council. Rep. Bigburg talked about how there was age-gating protections of physical copies of pornography in the past, and this age-gating protection unfortunately did not carry over into the digital world where most porn is consumed today. Now the content is hosted and spread online, and user data of the adult or child user is the transaction of the porn company. In the age of digital porn, unintentional exposure to this content is a common occurrence, as I'm sure we are all aware. A demographically representative survey of 13 to 17-year-olds conducted by Common Sense Media found that 58% of teens in the U.S. have accidentally seen porn. For those who report accidentally seeing this, the source of exposure is broad. 25% report that they accidentally clicked on a link, and 18% reported accidentally seeing this on social media. The average age of first exposure is 12 years old, and 73% of teens 17 years old and younger report consuming porn. Although academic research on teenage exposure to this is limited, with ethical concerns, understandably, negative impacts from teenage exposure have been measured. Youth are exposed to sexual violence on this content, and increased sexual aggression risk due to exposure has been measured, along with increased depression and anxiety, particularly for adolescent girls. This product was initially not designed for youth or kids, but the industry has not self-regulated to ensure that minors are not their customers online. Without statutory protection for youth, the industry is not held accountable in Minnesota for consumer protection. Consumer protection of kids cannot be disregarded in the online marketplace. House File 1434 would require dedicated digital porn websites to obtain age verification before granting access to the site. If passed, the language of the bill would require compliance from dedicated sites. Unfortunately, the bill would not protect kids from all digital porn as the content exists on various platforms. This legislation is not a silver bullet solution. Yes, there should be legal protection for kids from all of this content. However, considering that our state does not protect kids from dedicated sites in 2026, we think this is a step in the right direction that the legislature can take in a bipartisan manner. Rep. Bakeberg talked about a survey released last week, February 9th, which found that 84% of nearly 1,100 U.S. adults believe that porn websites should require age verification. The companion bill, SF-2105, has split authorship across party lines, and the House bill could also have that same bipartisan support to reflect what 84% of U.S. adults think about this issue. Half the states in the country have passed laws which require porn companies to age-gate users. The California Assembly in 2024 passed a bill unanimously which included language to require age verification of digital porn sites. And members of the EU and UK also require age verification for this content. Porn companies can comply in a variety of industry standard ways. Compliance can involve conducting age verification on the site or redirecting the potential user to a third-party age verification provider to check age before signaling to the porn company whether the person trying to access is over 18 or under 18, and we'll hear more about that. We are concerned about protecting data in this process. According to the language of the bill, the entity performing age verification must, number one, delete any data collected within 24 hours after completing the process, and with the author amendment, it cannot transfer or disclose any identifying information except as to comply with the law. And thirdly, the entity cannot sell the data to a third party. I saw that opposing testimony asked, how can an individual who has gone through this age verification process to enter a website be sure that the company or website is not keeping their identity and personal information? With the author amendment, an independent annual audit demonstrating proof of compliance must be conducted and prepared for the Attorney General's office upon request. We want to thank Rep. Bakeberg for his leadership in this area and encourage members to support this effort. The state cannot abandon the responsibility of consumer protection of youth because this is the digital marketplace. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Delahunt, for your testimony. We'll ask you to kind of stick close by in case there are questions when we get to the member discussion portion of this. Our next testifier is coming via Zoom, and it is Ian Corby, who is the executive director of the Age Verification Providers Association. So with that, we will bring in Ian Corby. Are you with us this morning?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
We can. There you are. go ahead and proceed with your testimony. If you can take about 3 to 4 minutes and share your thoughts, the committee greatly appreciate it. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Commerce Committee.
Thank you. So my name is Ian Corby. It's a slightly Scottish spelling designed to fool Americans, so I apologize for that. I am the executive director of the HR Education Providers Association. We have 35 members around the world, about a third of whom are based in the USA, who provide privacy-preserving ways of proving your age online. So the aim of our industry is to prove your age without disclosing your identity. And we've done over 1 billion age checks. This is now a requirement across Europe, across the UK, down in Australia for social media. It's definitely picking up pace around the world. And we've done it so far without any major data breaches because we never retain any data. That's the golden rule. The only non-hackable database is no database at all. So having checked somebody's age, if we've used any personal data, then we make sure we delete that straight away. Now, how can we do that age check? Well, obviously, the most conventional way is to find a piece of government ID, a passport, a driver's license, compare that to an image of the person to make sure the two match and that nothing is an AI fake. And then we simply pass on to the website you're trying to access a yes or a no. Is the person over 18 or not? None of that personal data is ever passed on. But there are other ways of doing this now. We can figure out your age from your email address, from your cell phone number. We could ask your bank to confirm your age. And then there are estimation methods like facial age estimation, for example, where with a quick selfie, we can estimate your age within 2 years of the real age. Obviously, that's no good to check if you've just turned 18, but for somebody as long in the tooth as me, if it estimates that I'm aged around 50, there's no chance at all I'm actually still under 18. Another estimation technique is based solely on moving your fingers on the camera, and based on how you move your fingers, it's been proven that you can tell whether somebody is over or under the age of 18 with 98% success. We did a major trial funded by the Australian government last year on the efficacy of age assurance technology, and their main conclusion was that age assurance can be done, and this allowed them to bring in a minimum age for social media of 16. Obviously, many US states are now doing this. I think about 25 for the adult industry require age verification. We have interoperable solutions where if you prove your age to one site, you don't have to repeat that process to all the other sites. You can just carry on and reuse the same age. I'll pause there and be very happy to take any questions at the end of your discussion points.
Thanks, Mr. Corby. Apparently, you have hit a chord with some of our members. I have three members who would like to ask you questions. We'll start with Representative Cha. Representative Cha, did you have a question?
I did not. Sorry. Fire?
Okay. Okay, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Tessfer, how do you ensure that they're not like using an older brother's face or? How do you guard that the person that you're verifying is the person using the website?
Mr. Corby.
Yeah, thank you. That's a very good question. So I should say that very little technology could ever prevent conspiracy. So in the same way as an older brother could go into a liquor store and buy liquor for a child, it's always possible to have somebody to conspire with you. But we can do some things to prevent that or make it harder. So, for example, instead of just doing one check at one time and then making that a pass for life, we might ask you to do another check a week later or 3 weeks later, and this time your big brother might not be available for you to use their face. And there are also ways that the platforms can be checking the usage and the behavior patterns of the user to flag users who might still be underage, even if they've somehow proven that they are. So overall, we can't claim that we have 100% success. We look for what we call highly effective age assurance in the UK, and we've set the bar there at being 95% successful. So 95% of kids who are a year or two below the legal age cannot get through those checks. And if they do get through once, they won't get through the second or a third time.
Sure, can I go follow up?
And then just kind of curious with the finger technology. What if you don't have all your fingers or you have a disability? How do you kind of take into account for that?
Mr. Corby. This
is a very good point. In fact, for all of the different methods of age assurance, some people may not have documents. Other people may be partially sighted and struggle to position their face where we need it to be positioned for a facial estimate. So we always try to offer as many different ways of age assurance as possible. the way this bill is drafted is the same way the Supreme Court endorsed in Paxton versus Free Speech, which is giving users plenty of choice. So ideally, everybody can find at least one method that works for them. And with this reusable, interoperable era we're now moving into, you've only got to find one that works for you once, and that will allow you into any age-restricted website.
Thank you.
All right. Seeing no other questions, we'll move to the next testifier, Renee Carlson. And then after Ms. Carlson will be Catherine Myers on deck. Good morning, Ms. Carlson, and welcome to the committee. I ask you to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. About 3 to 4 minutes was what we'd be looking for this morning. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair O'Driscoll, Chair Cagle, and members of the committee. My name is Renee Carlson. I serve as General Counsel for True North Legal. Like many of you in this room, we care deeply about protecting children. And I think we can all agree that technology has come a long way since some of us were playing Oregon Trail or saving things to floppy disks. Yes, I had to get some humor and lighten up the room today. Children and teens can now carry around in their pockets via devices the internet. They carry them around smartphones and other things all of the time. They have access to an entire tech universe at the palm of their hands any hour of the day. But technology has changed significantly since legislative bodies first tried to pass age verification laws in the early 2000s. The internet is much more invasive than it was then, and children are increasingly stumbling upon violent pornographic content. Guardrails are warranted because the safety of our children is a priority, and that's the purpose of this bill. Turning to the law, I want to affirm that House File 1434 is on solid legal footing. Last year, in FSC versus Paxton, the United States Supreme Court upheld a similar Texas law requiring pornography websites to verify the age of their users before providing access. Here, the court applied the intermediate scrutiny standard, holding the Texas law does not burden speech under the First Amendment because the law only incidentally burdens adult speech, affirming its long-standing precedent that states have a specific interest in protecting children from objectionable material considered harmful to minors. The court recognized that children have a limited capacity, both neurologically and in maturity. Because of these limitations, the court affirmed that states are well within their authority to place boundaries on children that in some circumstances would not be permissible for adults. It's also important to make clear that just like the Texas law, House File 1434 does not block adult access to websites with adult content. It simply requires age verification, which the court noted is common when a law draws lines based on age. Like House File 1434, this law is simply adapting the same principle to today's technology to protect kids. We are aware of the objections raised about this bill in one group's written testimony. I just would like to inform the members that it's important to understand that many of those objections are based on legal arguments that were raised in FSC versus Paxton recently at the United States Supreme Court, and those arguments lost. The majority opinion very clearly resolves those objections, stating requiring proof of age is an ordinary and appropriate means of enforcing an age-based limit on obscenity to minors, and adults have no First Amendment right to avoid age verification. So the question before you today is not whether the bill is legal, it's whether shielding kids from a predatory industry is the right public policy decision. With 84% of adults surveyed supporting age verification, the public has reached a clear consensus. We agree. Protecting children's innocence should not be a controversial public policy decision, it's just common sense. Thank you, members, for your time today, and I appreciate your consideration of this important issue.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Carlson. And with that, we'll bring up Ms. Myers. Good morning, Ms. Myers, and welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Again, about 3 to 4 minutes time frame, if you would.
Catherine Myers, K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E-M-Y-E-R-S. Good morning, Chair O'Driscoll and Chair Cagle and committee members. Before I address the issue at hand, I would like to share my deepest sympathies for the loss of your colleague, Representative Melissa Hortman. Minnesota grieves with you
In addition, I would like to thank you for the beautiful bipartisan way that you all showed up on the first day of the session to honor and respect your colleague and our civil servant. May you have a successful legislative session, and may the spirit of bipartisanship continue. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of the well-being of Minnesota young people. Widely accessible, modern-day hardcore pornography through the internet, video games, and social media is a challenging topic to address, so I commend you for engaging in the conversation. I would like to note that what is referred to as hardcore porn is also commonly identified as adult entertainment. Perhaps that is a secondary bill to be written. I am Catherine Myers, the co-founder and executive director of a Minnesota-based organization, Live More, Screen Less. I founded the organization in 2019 after spending 25 years in the classroom with young people. Our mission is to support digital well-being for and with young people. So it is that, with that mission in mind, that I come before you to support House File 1434 and also to encourage you to consider additional ways you can support the well-being of young people. In today's world of 24/7 digital access, we believe there is no well-being without digital well-being. In addition, our organization is grounded in positive youth development. That means that we recognize and understand the adolescent development stages of young people. Young people report to us, 69% of them said that they do not find the way that adults talk to them about their technology use to be helpful. So we change that. We begin by listening to them. In a recent facilitated conversation with young people, I recall a young person stating to us, "I have seen things at a young age I should not have seen." It is clear in her comment she has shame and worry for her younger self. It is in these listening sessions where young people come to understand that they are not alone in the ways they struggle with managing the weight of technology in their lives. The use and access to hardcore pornography is a difficult topic to discuss and holds a great amount of shame. The bill before you is requesting an age verification to restrict under 18 users to access these hardcore porn sites. The bill has good intentions. It is a starting point. Just as in my age, we tried to regulate cigarettes for minors, yet as a high schooler, those cigarettes were available in a vending machine outside of the pizza joint. One quick Google search, how do young people access pornography? The top headlines are as follows. Reddit, how to watch porn, bypass porn with a VPN. Cybernews, January 2026, how to watch porn without age verification in the U.S. PC Risk, February 2026, how to bypass age verification on porn websites in the U.S. YouTube, how to watch porn after a porn ban. I'm not here to stop you from passing this bill. I'm here to say it is not enough. And hardcore porn is an addictive problem that needs to be acknowledged, talked about, and addressed. According to Culture Redefined and the pornography expert, Dr. Gail Dines, here are some startling data. 1 billion young people are exposed to porn globally. 1 in 3 kids see hardcore porn by age 12. 88% of porn scenes contain violent images. Hardcore porn is not a Playboy magazine of the past. It's violent, easily accessible, beyond a dedicated website like Pornhub. It is seen on video games and social media. Laws might help, but laws are not enough. Again, I am not advocating against these restrictions. Age verification introduces a barrier, but as noted, barriers have workarounds. I would like to offer conversation starters from the Culture Reframed website. They include, you cannot unsee pornography. Pornography is scripted. It doesn't represent healthy sex. Porn can trigger a range of feelings, including curiosity, confusion, disgust, arousal, and guilt. Porn depicts a power imbalance. Women are the objects of degradation and violence. Just because something is arousing doesn't mean it is healthy. I urge you to strive to value young people, to listen to them, to invite them into conversations, to reduce shame and support their journeys. I hope you will consider the bill and what you as lawmakers can do to reduce the propensity of violence against women and the easy access that our young people have indiscriminately to hardcore porn. And let us all commit to that we will do what we can so that no young person will say again, I have seen things at a young age that I should not have seen. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Myers, for your testimony. That concludes the testifiers who have asked to testify in advance. Is there anyone from the public here today that would like to offer comment for the committee's consideration? Anyone from the public wishing to testify on the matter before the committee? With that, we'll go to member questions. Seeing none and hearing none, we'll go to member questions. Seeing none and hearing none, we'll go to member questions.
Oh, sorry.
Representative Cha, you were on the list. Is this... They told me you were on the list. I'll come back to you again.
I'm not, but I have a question. Thank you.
Go ahead.
You know, I'm interested in the biometric stuff. Do you see us using biometric to, like, do age verification for, like, you know, cigarettes and alcohol in the future?
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. They were just... I'm sorry, Representative Cha.
Sorry. About the biometric stuff, I'm just curious if you foresee us using that method also for purchase of cigarettes and alcohol in the future?
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. To be very honest, Representative Cha, I am not an expert in biometrics, so I'm just focused on age verification for adult content for pornography to protect kids. That's the intent of this bill, and I am not going to wade out of areas that I know nothing about. So,
Representative Cha, follow-up?
That's fair. Thank you.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't see you. We all agree that we want to protect our kids. And so, and I think that this, you know, the motivation behind this is good. I think just the devil's in the details, and we have to make sure that there's not unintended consequences that happen because of it. And so I do have some major concerns around some of the language in the bill. Have you requested a fiscal note on this? Because I see that there'll probably be enforcement and so Commerce and the AG would probably need some support to do this work.
Representative Bakeberg.
So I will be requesting a fiscal note. We got word yesterday about that. So
thank you.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question I had is on lines 2.2 or 2.12 and 2.13. Taken as a whole, lacks serious literacy, artistic, political, or scientific value for minors. Who determines that?
Representative Cagle, procedurally, is that in the bill or is that in the amendment that you were referencing?
Well, the bill 2.2 and then the amendment.
Okay.
Didn't change that language.
Representative Bakeberg.
I couldn't hear you. Representative Cagle, could you repeat?
Oh, sure. So line 2.12. Where it says, taken as a whole, lacks serious literacy, artistic, political, or scientific value for minors. Who determines that?
Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, I'll let one of my testifiers answer.
Thank you.
Ms. LaHunt?
Yes. Yep. So it's my understanding, and I might punt to my colleague here, it's my understanding that lines 2.3 to 2.13 are a legal standard that has existed for, I think, since the 90s in a court case in California about what constitutes material harmful to minors. And this is actually an exclusion because some artistic content might show nudity, but it might be explained in art history, for example. And so if there is content that is a part of educational purposes, but not, as it says, to the prurient interest, that would not be covered under material harmful to minors. Does that answer your question, Chair Cagle? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, because I want to know, like, my kid has pink hair and she's 7. Some other parent might think that that's not appropriate. How are we measuring the values and who determines if a piece, look at some of the artworks from, you know, ancient Rome, and they went through and put up little leaves on all of the nude parts. And so, like, who is determining that, and how do we set some sort of base level moral code when we have such differing opinions on what might be art or what might be, you know, political speech? I just think that that's really can open us up to a lot of arguments, I guess, you know, value-based things. And I'm just wondering if it's the role of government to determine what this is. I'm sorry, that makes more sense.
Chair Kegel, is that more of a comment, or,
well,
or I'm not sure who.
I'm just trying to figure out how it would actually like work in reality. You know, how do they determine these things? Who is the moral judge of them? And is that something that everybody could agree
well,
to?
Chair Kegel, I don't know that we're necessarily going to be able to resolve that particular issue this morning in the committee. However, we do plan to lay this bill over, and there is opportunity for us to continue to work on this or other topics around that as we look to craft a bill to see if we can help with that.
Thank you.
Right. I have been told that our Zoom testifier may be able to shed some light on this. Again, I'm going to ask for some brief comments on this. We do have a number of other members and two other bills that we'd like to give hearings to today. So, Mr. Corby, if you could succinctly answer that question that Chair Kegel had, I believe.
Very briefly, this would be a question for a court to answer. And the Supreme Court, in setting this test, which is known as the Miller test from the case which it arose from, was essentially saying that it would have to be decided based on what local community standards are, which may be different in your state than from another state, for example. But it's ultimately a decision for a court.
Thank you, Mr. Corby. Final thoughts, Representative Kegel, before we move on to other members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't trust this Justice Department, and so I just have very, very reservations about some of this. So, thank you.
Duly noted. Thank you. Representative Finke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Baitberg. During your opening remarks, and I appreciate this, and I agree with what you're saying, that there is an underlying goal in this bill that I agree with, right? There is something happening in this bill. I mean, I just, like, people don't have to take me at my word because of who I am, because they often don't. But in this committee, I've made it very clear who I am. You know, I put this in the category of some of our liquor bills, like, I do not want people to have access to things that do harm to them when they are young. And I use this as a precursor because a lot of terrible things are said about me and what I believe and what I want. And I want to support the basic part of this. But above that, I want to talk about some of these bills. You mentioned 25 other states have bills like this, and those bills are not used to do that. Right, these bills are very specific. I mean, they used to do that, but they're also used to do an entire another category of work. And you mentioned the Paxton case, and the AGs in many states are very clear about that. They're almost jubilant about being able to use these laws to ban young people from accessing content that could be educational if they are queer. And you are a principal. You have LGBT students in your school, and we also know that they're not receiving sex education for queer kids. We know that prurient interest could be, for many people, the very existence of transgender kids. More and more people are saying there simply are no transgender kids. To transgender kids, that is a problem. And if the law like this, which is pretty clear here that there's a lot of ability to define what is prurient and what lacks value, I want to know directly, like, can we get this bill to a place where we can agree we will not use this against content that is designed for people under 18 to educate them about themselves, their lives, their community? Because you have a list of things in here that I want children not to access. But I know how attorney generals are using data requests to get young people's names who are accessing transgender content. We can say that's not going to happen, but we see it happening. So we in Minnesota, we protect everyone. And I just want to know from you, from the people who are behind this bill, this is not a weapon to penalize trans kids or LGBT kids once we have a different attorney general in that office.
Representative Bakeberg.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Finke, and thank you for wanting to work together, 100%, because whether it be in my professional role as a school principal, whether it be as a state representative, my goal, and I think everyone in the room's goal, is to protect kids and to make sure that we're supporting all kids. Kids are moving through a process of growth and development, and I want to come alongside kids and make sure that we're supporting kids to grow into the person that they're, that into who they're created to be. So I am deeply committed to doing whatever we can do to make sure, and I think going back to the underlying intent of the bill, the goal of the bill is to protect kids from going to dedicated sites. We have that 33% or that one-third threshold to make sure that it that we're catching the sites that we need to be addressing. So, Representative Finke, I would love to work more on this and work together to be able to meet the underlying goal of the bill to protect kids.
Very good. Just another quick follow-up.
Go real ahead. Quick. I appreciate that, Representative, and I believe you. Right, and I take seriously the idea that we can work together. I think that there are people involved in this who are eager to use it against the communities that they are trying to erase. I'm just gonna be honest about that. And if we can figure out a way to do one thing without like a description of an act, right, that's a pretty broad standard for us to make sure that kids can access. Especially if you are an LGBTQ kid who will receive zero sex education in your school. And I mean their school, but I mean specifically your school too, right? We don't teach that. So we need to make sure we're doing something useful and not something explicitly harmful. Thank you.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Braberg, for bringing a good bill on this. I mean, with the exceptions that we heard here, which I agree with. One of my concerns, and Chair, if you'll give me a leniency here, I know this goes into more public safety and judiciary, which I see the bills being laid over, but the enforcement of this concerns me. I mean, this thing that we're talking about here, that we're going to continue to talk about, is like an animal. It doesn't see state boundaries. It goes everywhere. If Wisconsin doesn't pass this law, it pretty much doesn't do much for my area of the state because kids will still be able to get on this. So that's one of my concerns about how are we going to enforce this? I mean, are we going to have people watching these sites? What are we going to do? And then on top of that, if we do have a bad player in this space, like a corporate person, they could be an offshore company. God knows, because the internet is so broad. And then the last point, and I'll be done after that, is bad players. Now, I see you addressed parent or legal guardian in the bill on 3.19, but we know that it goes beyond parent and guardians. When someone's grooming a kid or something like that, I think that they also, I mean, they're acting bad already, but it seems like, did we reach to that level of where you want to see some of this go for opening up a site like this or giving access to a minor with this stuff? So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was wondering if Representative Bayberg can give a little bit of insight on that.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Our next member question comes from Representative Katiza Watone.
Sorry, I thought Representative Bakeberg was going to address that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think that this is really worthy of discussion, Representative Bakeberg, and I appreciate you bringing it forward. I have a question regarding the definition of commercial entity on lines 1.11 through 1.13. So included in that section is corporation, partnership, LLC, limited liability partnership, et cetera. And so some some nonprofits and educational organizations are like they kind of fit the IRS definition of a corporation, and I'm just curious if those nonprofits and educational organizations could be exempt from this particular legislation.
Representative Baker. Ms. Dela Hunt.
Yeah, thank you. So I think the bill applies to websites where a third of the content viewed falls under that definition of material harmful to minors. So I'm very much envisioning that the websites that this would apply to are dedicated websites to pornography and not, you know, if that's not the sole purpose of the site where people are going and viewing that content regularly, I don't think they would fall under the scope.
Representative Katizuatone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that clarification. I guess, you know, I, as a member, have been a part of debates on the House floor where people have, you know, not used a prop, but referred to a book that might have been provided by a nonprofit organization and had some images that people found to be harmful to minors, which, again, you know, when we don't know who is creating the limits that the chair Cagle referred to earlier, I think it just is a lot of gray area. So I think we do need some additional clarity. Like, I mean, as a breastfeeding mother and who breastfed for 2.5 years of my child's life, like La Leche League may have some descriptions and depictions and images, particularly in line 2.2 of intimate parts that include a partially or fully exposed nipple that are not meant to be sexual in any way, shape, or form. Although I will note that, you know, Pornhub has all sorts of different videos on their site. You just have to click yes or no. I'm 18 years old, and there's all sorts of breastfeeding stuff on there. I've done some research. And I think it is important, particularly when we consider we want our kids to be safe. This bill may prohibit them from seeing some of that information. But I think that we also have to have some other conversations on whether or not this kind of bill goes far enough, because you know, we look at sex trafficking, we look at some of the young people, not just young women, who are used in these videos. And when we have, you know, one of our Republican colleagues in the other body who was arrested for pedophilia, I think that, you know, we as a body have a lot of work to do. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be happy to kind of work with you on some of that. But I think a potential exclusion, particularly for those nonprofits or educational organizations, even though they may not qualify based on the one-third content, I think a specific exclusion might be helpful. Also, I'm not noting any inclusion of social media in the like limitations as well. And I know, you know, there's so much content on social media, but I'm wondering if we may want to include some sort of some sort of language that would require social media companies to take down that sort of graphic video, because we know that they're not always being proactive in protecting kids in a variety of ways. So appreciate the work on this.
Thank you. And very, very quickly, because we are running out of time and there are two other bills that folks would like to have a hearing on today. I guess I didn't anticipate that there was going to be this many questions when we were talking about trying to size up what the issues and questions are for the author to try to collectively as a team get to an end game, Representative Bakeberg. So I'll give you a couple moments here and then we're going to go to our final member question.
Thank you, Representative Katizuatone. Good questions. That's one of the reasons we went from the 25% threshold to a third threshold, actually for the example that you gave specifically around a breastfeeding mother. So we can have further conversations about that, but good points.
And Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. I'll echo what a lot have said, which is I think this the intent behind this to protect children from this material we all agree with. I do think this bill, as it currently is both too broad and not specific enough on the regulation side. So two examples of questions I want to ask you, and then I have a follow-up question. On page 3 of the bill, there's two mechanisms of enforcement I want to ask about. The first is, and this comes from the amendment that you filed today, specifically says in the amendment that the company has to delete the name of the individual or the identity to protect that information, and then it also requires an audit to be done of those commercial entities. So what information is going to be in that audit to make sure these people are complying? Just number of times they deleted someone's name? I mean, I'm confused what's going to be in that audit to make sure that they are complying if there's, you know, not identities or information that could lead to identities.
Representative Bakeberg.
I would ask my testifier online to address it. He's an expert in that area.
Mr. Corby, is that who you're referring to?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Corby, if you could. He apparently is no longer available via Zoom.
We can maybe take that offline, but I mean, the one specific question. Can I do a follow-up there, Chair?
Yes.
One other specific question on the enforcement side of things. This is in 3.14. So a person who accesses this section may report the violation to the Attorney General. Upon receipt of the report made under this paragraph, the Attorney General must investigate. That's line 3.15. And you do have an addition in your amendment, but it still says must investigate. On my colleague's questions previously, in our current climate, we know that groups will use things like this to weaponize action, where they could disagree with a certain sex education curriculum and spam the Attorney General with requests about this. And in this, in the wording currently, I don't see the Attorney General's office having the ability to say, this is, you know, okay material. We're not going to investigate every single time someone reports this. Can you talk maybe about someone trying to go outside of your intent and weaponize this bill and how to prevent that?
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you. I'll be quick. Just a reminder, this is about violent pornographic materials. So, and the Attorney General's office has discretion on whether or not they're going to investigate. They must investigate it, and they look into it, and then they determine it is not a violent pornographic, situation. So then that would be the extent of their investigation. The next line talks about that they may investigate. The intent of that is if there's a news article or something comes out and the Attorney General's office wants to investigate something, so they see something, so they have the latitude to investigate as well.
Representative Smith? You said two questions and a final follow-up, so I'm assuming this is your final follow-up.
I'll do a final follow-up. I think there's some more conversation. I don't see violent in the bill specified as specifically as maybe your intent specifies. I just think that's a discussion we can have. My final thing that I wanted to talk about just in this bill generally and about protecting children, the court case in 2025 that brought this series of bills about, Free Speech versus Paxton, did find that this bill does impinge slightly on the first right or the free speech rights of adults, but that it was worthwhile to the state to impinge slightly to protect children. That was the finding of this court. Do you know what the leading cause of death for minors in the United States is the last 20 years? I'll answer because we don't have time. It's firearms. And we hear time and time again that we cannot impinge on the Second Amendment rights for the safety of children. And so while we're talking about the safety of children and passing laws to put in place some impingements on rights to protect our children, I think we should mention that time and time again we have tried, in the leading cause of death for children, to put in common sense legislation like age verifications. And have been stonewalled. So I think it's worth talking about in the context of this bill that we should be for protecting children in all aspects of our society.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Although that is not within the purview of our committee, thank you for that thought that you shared with us. I have no other member questions at this point. Representative Bakeberg, I will give you like 20 seconds to wrap up so we can move on to other bills that are before the committee today. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, members, for a good discussion. I look at this as an educator and as a dad, and I've seen the damaging effect that pornography has on kids and the adult content has on kids. And the simple goal of this bill is to provide the exact same protections for kids in the digital world that we've had in place in the physical world. That's the goal, and I look forward to working with anyone that wants to work on it moving forward. Thank you.
And with that, thank you to the members and to Representative Bateberg and his testifiers. I will again lay over House File 1434 for future work and possible inclusion. The next bill that we are going to take is House File 2500, and Representative Faulkner, you are on the committee, and you are also the bill's chief author. We have four testifiers, and as we are getting ready to have Representative Faulkner go to the testifying table, I'd ask that you go ahead and also bring your testifiers forward, and I will move House File 2500 before the committee. And Representative Faulkner, there's also a DE1 amendment in here. I'm assuming that DE1, by its nature, is an author's amendment. Am I correct on that?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Yep, and as a member of the committee, you certainly can move your DE1 amendment for consideration.
Yeah, thank you. I move the DE1 amendment.
Representative Faulkner moves the DE1 amendment to House File 2500 to get the bill in the shape that the author wishes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative, you are teed up and ready to go here on House File 2500.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Realizing time, I'll try to keep this quick. Thank you for taking time with your gavel also to hear this bill. I really do appreciate it. This bill came to me when UHG, which is the largest nation's largest health insurance provider, was rocked by revelations, investigations, and lawsuits alleging that their AI software program, NH Predict, was knowingly and errantly denying claims for physician-ordered care. Plaintiffs alleged their AI tool had a 90% error rate and that UnitedHealth continued to use it, knowing it was deeply flawed, and even pressured employees to continue using it regardless. UnitedHealth continued, I will state that their lawyers deny this claim. It is moving through the courts. A federal judge allowed the lawsuit to proceed in 2025. The lawsuit claims UnitedHealth used their AI to create a monetary windfall by denying care, knowing that only a minuscule percentage, which is roughly 2% of patients, would actually appeal. During that same time, for those that don't know, I coach during two seasons in schools in my district. During one afternoon's practice, a student was visibly struggling, so I went up to check on her. She was pale, disoriented, and clearly needed to stop. She described how normally her insulin pump would keep her blood sugar regulated so she could attend and participate almost as if normal. But her insurance company denied paying for her pump's timely refill. And she, as almost any high school athlete I know, decided, I'm just going to gut it out, see what happens, and learn the hard way after a hospital visit that wasn't the best idea. Though, of course, none of this fault should be laid at the feet of a child. UHD had put in place a system that systematically denied physician-ordered care with the benefit of padding their $22 million in profits that year and potentially cost one of my athletes their life, but certainly did cost them an unnecessary and avoidable hospital visit. Is AI inherently bad? Well, of course not. I mean, but a computer program, just like a corporation, is a creation of humankind. The legal code baked into a corporation is to maximize profit for shareholders' benefit. That's their literal only literal legal reason to exist. AI, also human creation, is a software code designed to do the bidding of its creators. Whether the software is operating correctly or not, the ramifications happen at scale given the massive and rapid adoption. Major corporations are utilizing the potential to streamline processes to maximize shareholder value. AI done right can have tremendous benefits. And with regards to pre-authorization requests, AI can be used for good, and that's what my author's amendment sought to reflect. It can speed up paperwork processing time, scan forms to make sure they're filled out correctly and completely, be used to standardize paperwork and systems across the board, etc. Used right, AI can and does move prior authorization requests forward faster, delivering the results both doctors and patients want, need, and expect. However, there is growing concern about continuing to allow health insurance companies to leverage AI in making adverse decisions regarding pre-authorization requests. This has resulted in an unacceptable number of flawed results, such as the one that happened to one of my student athletes. And apparently enough, other patients to spark an investigation and lawsuit landing on the front page of major newspapers across the country, massively decreasing the stock value and profits of the largest insurance company in the country. I also do feel, though, that it's important to acknowledge that healthcare is not just a business. It's a deeply human endeavor. The decisions made about patient care, treatments, and interventions impact real lives, including everybody in this room. Relying on algorithms to dictate who receives care can strip away the nuanced understanding that medical professionals bring to the table, an understanding that goes beyond mere data points. AI systems, no matter how advanced, lack the empathy, compassion, and real-world experience that are fundamental to effective and personalized healthcare. Moreover, the use of AI in pre-authorization processes runs the risk of perpetuating existing biases and inequalities. AI systems learn from historical data. They're trained on what we know now to solve a problem or to work forward. AI systems, but this can reflect systemic biases that's in that data set right now. For example, black and brown and indigenous women are twice as likely to die from complications during pregnancy. When insurance companies use these algorithms to deny coverage, that data set that led to those results potentially is baked into that system. They may unintentionally reinforce these disparities in healthcare access for marginalized groups. When the system is unable to learn the moral ramifications of decisions that are baked in, that went into the decision-making process, they're not going to be able to correct for the future. The lack of transparency surrounding AI decision-making makes it nearly impossible for medical professionals and patients to appeal adverse decisions, and the very essence of patient-provider relationships is stripped away. These relationships are built on trust, communication, and shared decision-making, and a human-to-human understanding of the ramifications of an incorrect diagnosis or treatment plan. If an AI system becomes the gatekeeper for necessary medical care, it diminishes the relationship between patients and their healthcare providers. Patients lose faith in a healthcare system that prioritizes efficiency, cost savings, and shareholder value over personalized care. They face insurmountable obstacles to attempt the appeals process. They're required to pay for expensive life-saving treatments while trying to navigate that same process out of pocket, hoping to get reimbursed someday, or are too oftentimes forced to forego treatment altogether. A majority of patients surveyed reported their condition significantly worsened as a result of the delayed denial initiated by the AI-driven system. As a reminder, it's alleged that 90% of denials were wrongly issued and that only 0.2% of patients went through the appeals process. More than half didn't even know that they had the option to appeal should they have had the time and resources to initiate and track the process to conclusion. In conclusion, a software program built to maximize profit by denying physician-ordered care is immoral, unethical, demonstrably results in worsening patient care outcomes, erodes trust in what should be an inherently human system, has led to death, forced early discharges, perpetuates systemic biases, shifts undue burden onto patients and providers, increasing their real-world expense, making their lives, in turn, and businesses more unaffordable. But here's the good news. It's at least relatively easy to solve. We can and should disallow computers from overriding medical professionals. We can and should return to a human-centric system of evaluating these potential denials and working to find a solution that works for both the patient and provider. I think the pre-authorization system could use quite a bit of reform. I feel like this is just a small angle of it, but a good step forward. And so with that, I will end my remarks, allow testifiers to come up, and we'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Faulkner. And the first testifier we have is Dr. Krishan Sabanam, if I'm not mistaken, from the Hennepin County Chief Medical Officer with Hennepin Health. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, and I apologize for my pronunciation of your name if I butchered it.
No, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Good morning. My name is Dr. Krishnan Subramanian. I'm a pediatrician at Hennepin Healthcare and the chief medical officer at Hennepin Health, which is the state's only county-owned managed care organization. I represent a county and an organization that ensures that 35,000 incredible neighbors and some of the most vulnerable neighbors have access to healthcare and health coverage. We have no commercial component. We pay for medical care with Medicaid dollars. Recently, I cared for a young man with a rare illness. The medication he needed that had been shown to work had an extraordinarily high cost. As someone unable to work, he did not have private health care insurance. Covering that treatment came at a real cost to taxpayers. These are not decisions that should be taken lightly. But in this case, our request followed state guidelines. It was approved. The treatment worked. And it provided life-saving treatment. If AI can facilitate and expedite approval of care for folks, great. However, we do find it troubling if AI algorithms are being used to deny care. When taxpayer dollars are funding care and complex clinical decisions are being reviewed, that sacred relationship between providers and patients deserves a meaningful review, one that considers the full clinical picture, the lived experience of the patient, and importantly, the consequences of getting it wrong. When human lives are at stake, humans need to be involved. That is why we support the requirement of a human being be involved in any denial of care. We support HF 2500 and today's amendment to ensure that when care is questioned, it is done with a real human impact fully understood. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony, Doctor. And with that, we'll bring up Chad Fonning as our next testifier. And then following Mr. Fonning will be a Ann New Brindley.
Who?
Who's that? An Ann New Brindley is on deck. Welcome, Mr. Fonning, to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Chad Fanning with the Minnesota Medical Association. The MMA is the largest professional association advocating for doctors in Minnesota, representing over 10,000 physicians across the state. I am here to testify in strong support of House File 2500 as amended. We have worked a lot on prior auth reform over the years, most recently advancing legislation in 2024. Most of that law went into effect earlier this year, but one thing that was not addressed previously was the use of AI in prior auth. It is our position that if there is an adverse determination, that decision should be made by a reviewing health provider of a same or similar specialty, not a computer denying or delaying care based on an algorithm. We have extensive data showing that prior auth is a top cause of frustration by both patients and providers. About 70% of patients say that prior authorization is burdensome, with the majority saying that it is the top barrier to receiving care. For our members, according to national data, 94% of physicians reported that prior auth requirements delay access to necessary care, with 82% indicating that delays lead to patients abandoning recommended treatments altogether because there are simply too many hoops to jump through just to get their prescribed treatment. Nearly one in four physicians report that prior auth has led to a serious adverse event for a patient, including hospitalization, permanent impairment, or even death. These are serious decisions that need to be made by a trained healthcare provider, not a computer. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this issue. The state's physician community strongly supports this bill. However, we would suggest one change. The bill currently lives in Minnesota Statute 62A, regulating the use of prior authorization. We would suggest at a future date, shifting that language and duplicating it in 62M, so it applies to all utilization review. Nonetheless, this bill is a great step forward. It will help patients get the care that they need and ensure that doctors are doing what they do best, that is treating patients. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, sir. We'll have you stand by in case there are questions. And then our next testifier is, again, Ann New Brindley, followed by Dan Andreessen. Good morning, Ms. New Brindley. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Why do I know that name?
It's a mystery.
Okay.
I know you're all just have missed me desperately. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann New Brindley, and I represent the Minnesota Business Partnership. We are an organization of business leaders from across the state whose companies employ more than 500,000 Minnesotans. MBP is committed to a strong economy, affordable health care, and access to high-quality, evidence-based care for all Minnesotans. We appreciate the author's DE amendment limiting the prohibition of the use of algorithms and AI to apply only to adverse determinations and delaying the implementation represents significant change from the original proposal and addresses several concerns. We share the goal of ensuring that prior authorization denials are fair, clinically appropriate, and involve meaningful human judgment. At the same time, we oppose barriers to innovation that can improve health outcomes and reduce costs. Even as amended, the prohibition on algorithm or AI use in adverse determinations raises concerns. And most importantly, there is no clarity on what it means to use algorithms and AI. In practice, these tools are often used to support human reviewers. They are used to apply clinical guidelines consistently, identify missing information, and streamline those reviews. They are not used to replace clinical judgment, but even the new language may prevent this beneficial use of those tools. Now, I want to acknowledge Representative Falconer's opening comments that I think clearly indicate that it is not your intention to limit the use of those tools in those ways, but you all know that I'm a stickler for words and language, and the language as it is written does not reflect that and has serious concerns. So we do appreciate the changes made through the DE amendment. We also remain focused on ensuring that policies protect patients while allowing innovation that supports access, affordability, and better health outcomes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Brinley, for your testimony. And Mr. Dan Andreessen will be the final testifier that we have for our pre-logged list. And again, if there's anyone in the audience that wishes to testify in this matter, go ahead and identify yourself right now. We'll get you in queue. Anyone else wishing to testify? Mr. Andreessen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. We represent Minnesota's nonprofit insurers, which includes Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, Health Partners, Medica, and Sanford Health Plan. First, I want to thank Representative Falconer for reaching out to us to talk about this bill. We've had some construction conversations over the past year. AI is a promising technology that is being used to speed through administrative processes that humans can sometimes do, but not as efficiently. Everyone within the healthcare space is using AI. It's not just health insurers, it's also providers, hospitals, drug companies, device manufacturers. Everyone is using it in certain different ways. And health plans do use PA in order to speed up processes. But just like any technological tool, there is a limit to how you use AI, and it doesn't necessarily replace humans in some situations. And that includes adverse determinations. It has been standard practice for all of our plans that making an adverse determination is done by a licensed provider, physician, or pharmacist. We also must follow Minnesota Statute 62M.09, which also makes these requirements that a licensed provider make these final determinations. However, we know that as AI technology continues to advance, there's concerns about how it's going to be used, and we appreciate that the language is being used to limit the prohibition to just adverse determinations. This will allow health plans to continue to use this technology to speed our approval process, and we're using this technology to get us to a yes as fast as possible, not to a no. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. That, again, wraps up those who have signed up to testify, and there was no one identifying themselves wanting to be testifying before the committee. Member questions, I have none in the queue. Is there anyone that has a burning question that would like to leave the last 20 minutes for Representative Hansen for her bill. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. Thank you, Representative. I think this is a great bill. I am from Rochester, a global hub of medicine, so I want to speak out with a group in the medical community that doesn't normally get a loud voice here, and that is medical residents. I have spoken to many who the mountain of digital or physical paperwork that they are buried under because of prior auth rejections. And they are the medical professionals who have to go through that and fight for their patients to get the treatment that they need. I was just talking to an ophthalmological resident who visited me yesterday, who talked about how much prior auth rejections she was working on. And she specifically mentioned, which I think is interesting in this discussion, she noticed when some of her patients were turning 85, their glaucoma medication was kind of consistently being denied. And she didn't have a reason for that. And I said, you know, we have a bill tomorrow that I think might account for this, where a computer has, you know, a statistic or actuarial data that says at 85, this medication maybe isn't good. And so instead of consulting, it's just automatically rejected. And you could see her face sort of brighten up and say, yeah, that makes sense. That's why I'm spending so much time in paperwork and not advancing my professional skills so that I can be a healthcare leader in the future. So I think this is a great bill. I'm happy to be a co-author here, and I know a lot of my constituents who are medical residents will be very excited to hear that something like this is going through the legislature. So thank you.
All right. Again, no other member questions at this time. Representative Faulkner, as we did with House File 1434 as amended, we're going to lay that one over. We also are going to lay your bill, House File 2500, as amended over for possible consideration by future action by this committee. Thank you for your time.
All right.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could, I'm seeing a troubling trend in this committee right now, and I think we need to stop it right now. Comments were made today about that you don't trust the Attorney General. Well, I don't trust our Attorney General either, but I think we're probably talking about a different Attorney General. A member of the other body with talking about pedophilia. We're talking about gun control and the agenda here. I don't see anything about gun control. Yesterday was unrigged the system. That's about as clear as my fair share. I chaired this committee for 6 years. I've been on it for many, many years. And I don't like these little cheap political shots going on in Commerce. Take them to your other committees. Go to Education. Go to Health and Human Services. Knock yourself out. But not Commerce and not taxes. Taxes that's certainly not tolerated. But these little cheap shots that are kind of working their way in here don't help us whatsoever. So just take that in consideration, if you would. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids, I'm not going to specifically comment on it, but I would ask members to, again, just temper your comments and your thoughts to take into consideration what might be otherwise considered power words. And I don't need to get into a debate whether we're parsing words at this point, because we do have one other bill that's available here for us today. And so I'd like to move House File 1600 before us and ask Representative Hansen to come forward. 1606. And Representative Hansen, you are going to be the new author on a bill that was originally introduced by Representative Stevenson, who is no longer on this committee and has other duties in your caucus. And so first and foremost, let me tell you, welcome to the Commerce Committee. Glad that you're able to join us. And again, you are a member of the committee, and so I have 1606 before us, which again, like the other bills today, will be laid over for possible consideration. There's a DE1 amendment. I'm assuming the DE1 is your author's amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct, Chair.
As a member of the committee, you can go ahead and move the DE amendment. We will be done by 10 o'clock with this bill, given the nature of the types of bills we had today. Appreciate the discussion, but again, trying to be courteous of everyone who attended today on this snowy day. So with that, you'll go ahead and move your DE1 amendment.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to move the DE1 amendment.
All right. Representative Hansen moves the DE amendment to House File 1606. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author wishes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Hansen, the bill is in the form that we, I should say, that you would like to have it before us and the committee. So proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. I'm excited to be on the Commerce Committee, so I appreciate getting to present this bill so early in the session. I think it's a really time-sensitive and important issue. I want to start by just saying a few things before we get into the bill. The information that is covered in this bill is quite graphic and disturbing, and it may be particularly disturbing for anybody who has experienced the tragedy of sexual violence or gender-based hate crimes. I also want to name that sharing stories like what you'll hear today on a public stage like this takes an incredible amount of courage and strength and support, and so I want to thank our testifiers in advance for allowing us to go on this journey with you as you advocate to create change so nobody else has to endure, hopefully, what you've already endured. So thank you for allowing us to join you on that. Moving on to the bill. AI technology can be used for good in a whole lot of ways, but it can also be used for harm. And governing bodies around the world have really failed to adequately regulate a lot of aspects of AI, especially in a timely manner as they evolve. So I'm really glad that we're taking this step because it's always a good time to do the right thing. House File 1606 is a bill that defines nudified content, and it requires that nudifying features on apps, platforms, and websites be turned off in Minnesota. It also prohibits the advertisement and promotion of platforms with a nudifying option on social media or other websites, And lastly, the bill establishes civil penalties. So what do these apps do? Nudifying is a word a lot of people have not heard before. Nudifying or face swapping features allow and enable users to, among other things, create unauthorized deep fake porn and other sexually explicit content, including child sexual abuse material, also known as CSAM. By simply clicking on a Nudify feature embedded in a platform and uploading after uploading a non-explicit image of any person at any time to the platform, this feature then allows anybody to generate an image that can portray a person as nude or in other sexual positions or ways. So why are we so concerned about this, if it's not obvious? The victim pool here is continuously expanding, and so does the advancement of this technology. Your packets contain two reports from an organization called IWF. IWF's internationally recognized work focuses on stopping child sexual abuse online, and I want to specifically direct your attention to page 12 of the October 2023 report, where IWF lines up some non-sexual images that just depict how rapidly photo generation by AI technology is advancing, simply between February of 22 and May of 23. Here we are 3 years later, and the videos and images generated are even more realistic than ever before, and they can be really difficult to clock. Many people cannot tell the difference at all. I think we've all had a parent or grandparent that looked at an image that was AI, and we had to point that out to them. The technology advancement is not the only rapid escalation that we're seeing. The violent nature of the materials created using this technology and the predators' responses to them are also escalating. We know that these features can be turned off or removed because many companies who are in control of high-quality AI generative technology have already restricted this feature from their platforms. Reputable companies like Meta, ChatGPT, Adobe, Canva, and other popular platforms will not nudify an image upon request. Those features are not available. If you ask them to, they'll say, I can't do that. What else can I help you with? So why do we need to take action now? Nudified AI-generated content today is the worst it's ever been, meaning it's only going to get more and more pervasive and realistic with each passing day. The misuse of this technology has harmed too many people. It's empowered and enabled pedophiles and sexual predators to increasingly profit while causing more and more harm around the globe, particularly to children. These apps are readily available in nearly every app store, and we should not leave a dangerous tool like this to be available to be weaponized by more and more predators, nor should we leave this accessible to kids. We are already arriving too late to this work, folks, so we can't really afford to wait any longer.
Representative Hansen, please pardon the interruption, but we have 12 minutes left and four testifiers. I'm sorry. The committee was very engaged in other bills, and I do want to make sure that we get a chance to hear from your testifiers today. Mm-hmm. My apologies from the committee.
I'll just skip over. You know, the nudified AI-generated content today is something that I really think should keep us all up at night. I'm a survivor of this. There are images of me as a child on the internet that I have no idea where they end up. It's terrifying. You know, I got into politics not knowing what that was going to look like either. And I think that's the reality for a lot of people. And we have to do something about this. So I'll skip over a lot of my other comments here. And I can turn it over to my testifiers now, if that's okay, Chair.
Thank you. Again, my apologies. And I'm sorry to hear that you are a victim of this as well. With that, our first testifier is Molly Kelly. If Molly Kelly could come forward. And then we're going to have Molly Kelly followed by Jessica Gus Delisi. Very good. So Ms. Kelly, if you will go first, and then again we'll be followed by Ms. Gus Delisi. Good morning and welcome to the committee. And again, sorry to hear about your involvement in this, and the committee certainly is interested in preventing this from happening to other individuals. So thank you for being here with us today.
You're welcome. Members of the committee, my name is Molly Kelly. I'm from Otsego, Minnesota. I thank you and Representative Boehner and Hansen for having me here to talk today about HF 1606. The man who targeted me and us was my husband's best friend of 20 years. I could spend the few minutes I have describing the significant physical mental toll, but it's not how I want to use my time today. In one sentence, I was 6 months pregnant. My doctors were extremely worried, as was I. I stopped going to work in person, very paranoid that this pornography, that it was extremely realistic, where did it go and where is it? And I spent my maternity leave finding the guts to publicly speak for the Take It Down Act at the request of Senators Cruz and Klobuchar. I want to use my time today to talk about your kids and my kids, your grandkids, and the illusion of choice. When I realized this technology was being weaponized, I made the choice to delete nearly every trace of my kids from the internet. I did not announce my pregnancy or birth of my son online. But personal choice is an illusion. You can delete your apps, you can monitor your kids, but you cannot delete the phone in another person's hand. Because we have no expectation of privacy in public, any child on any playground can be turned into a target in seconds. Individual caution is no match for the automated engine of abuse. Deepfakes weaponize our very likeness and rob us of reality. This technology requires machine learning that is trained on actual abuse of real women and real children. It learns to match the face of your child onto the body of an exploited child. Every generated image is built using a library of real exploitation that incentivizes the continued abuse to improve the machine. Because this technology is overwhelmingly used on women and children, it creates a systemic barrier for us. It forces us to manage the fallout of intimate acts that never actually happened. For children, these images create a permanent record of humiliation, turning their own faces into weapons while still in grade school. Allowing apps to hide behind the lazy assertion of the First Amendment is a moral surrender. The software is the predator that weaponizes impulsivity. A 12-year-old can snap a photo of a classmate and create a deep fake pornographic image in the time it takes to walk between classes. No guardrails, no stopgaps. In contrast, this same 4-year-old is wildly unlikely to take the time, effort, and money to develop the skill necessary to do this using a tool that exists like Photoshop. I want to protect these impulsive kids also, and I want to target the actual program, which is the problem, which is the tool itself, and this bill does that. Courts have held that computer code is speech. It's and it also has a dual nature. Computer code is a language and considered expressive content-based speech, but it's also a content-neutral functional tool. We regulate the code and the parts of code used to hack bank accounts. We can regulate the undressing function of the code while leaving the artistic renderings alone. In other words, we can disable the weapon without stopping the artist. Is technology an amazing tool, or is it a destruction of our own making? The answer is yes. I read recently that kids have stopped dancing at school dances in music clubs because they fear being filmed and mocked and made into a meme. I am raising my sons in a world where I fear their likeness is going to be used in unspeakable abuse before they can read. By supporting HB 1606, we have a chance right now to be the heroes of their story. We can give them back the freedom to dance. We can't give them back the freedom to dance without recorded embarrassment, but we can prevent permanent harm of seeing themselves in a pornographic image. And if the government doesn't have a compelling interest in protecting the faces of our kids, I'm not sure what we're doing. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll now move to Ms. Gustalisi, and then followed by Ms. Gustalisi will be Ms. Hurley with her testimony, and then Sandy Johnson will be after that. Is there anyone wishing to testify that's not on the list? If you are, catch one of the pages, and we'll try to work you in here this morning. Ms. Gustalisi, welcome to the committee, and again, I'm sorry for your involvement and being a victim in this today as well. Thank you for your courage to be here.
Thank you. Thank you, and good afternoon. I want to thank Representative Bonner, Representative Hansen, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak today.
My name is Gustalisi, if you just state your name for the record,
yep.
I'm sorry.
My name is Jessica Gustalisi. I'm a Minnesota resident for over 25 years. I am here today to share my direct experience as a victim of deepfake and face swap technology and to strongly urge your support for this bill. This bill offers a vital step in protecting Minnesotans from the devastating consequences of this technology, and the penalties will directly fund support for services for victims. It ensures that the harm caused by these platforms can eventually be used to help survivors like myself and the strong woman next to me and the 80 other women in my case find a path forward towards recovery, and I implore your support for its swift passage. In June 2024, I was made aware that a former roommate of my now husband and I, and someone I considered a close friend, someone I trusted for over 20 years, used a family photo from my private Facebook account to create multiple pornographic videos and images. Not just one, but multiple, and not just of me, but of over 80 other women, some of whom my brave friends are still working to identify today. I cannot overstate the harm this technology has caused. I was afraid to leave my house for weeks. I suffered and still suffer trying to understand who to trust. When I go out with my husband for dinner, I look around and wonder who knows that I am one of them. And for me, this damage extends beyond persistent anxiety and feelings of re-victimization. Because these images now live on the internet forever, my career is in jeopardy. Not knowing if or where these images have been distributed, I had to contact my HR department to let them know what happened. Every single time I apply for a job, I will have to disclose this experience because I don't know where these images are. Additionally, like many of you, I cannot simply delete my image from the internet. I am a public face of the company that I work for. I am published in articles, webinars, blog posts, and I have speaking engagements. Because my image is publicly available through my professional roles, it continues to be easily accessible for this kind of malicious use. This highlights a critical point that Molly mentioned, that anyone with any online presence, whether personal or professional, is a potential target. Shortly after learning of this violation, I was invited to speak at an international conference. Day one, in a room full of women supporting women in technology, supposedly a safe place, a camera shutter clicked. I'm sure for pictures for the conference website, but in that one moment, in that shutter click, I was not just in that room full of women supporting women, I was also sent to the very darkest corners of the internet with one shutter click. I also ended up back in my hotel room with a panic attack. The ease with which these non-consensual images can be created and disseminated means that no one is truly immune. The internet is forever. The damage done is irreversible. Therefore, I respectfully urge each of you to vote for this bill, and by passing it, you will send a clear message that Minnesota values the safety and dignity of its citizens in the face of this emerging threat. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. And Ms. Hurley, we'll come to you, and then Sandy Johnson, if you would like to make your way up as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome. If you'll go ahead and state your name for the record. And again, sorry that you are also a victim involved in something that's not your own making.
Really quick, Chair. Sandy is going to send you the committee written testimony so that our testifiers.
I'm sorry. You got to be a little closer for everybody to hear you.
Sandy's going to send the committee written testimony so you can take her off the list. She's going to leave her time for these folks.
Okay.
My name is Megan Hurley. I'm here today to share my experience as a victim of deepfake and face swap technology. Just said, in June of 2024, I learned a man I had known for over 20 years and once considered a dear friend had used a picture from my private Facebook page and a paid website to make hyper-realistic nude images and pornographic videos of me and around 80, 85 other women, most of whom call Minnesota home. I cannot overstate the irreversible harm and damage this has done to me and these other Minnesotans. Personally speaking, it broke me open to be violated in this way. I missed 2 months of work, depleted my savings, and went into debt trying to recover and help identify and notify the other women who were pictured. In truth, I did not feel ready to return to work. I've been a massage therapist for over 23 years, a profession that is unfortunately already sexualized. In an attempt to ID these other women, we utilized a reverse image search tool we were told the police often use. Often, a professional headshot on a business or a conference website was returned. I fear someone could consume this pornography of me, same reversed image, look me up and find my work website, make an appointment, get naked, and re-victimize me. My workplace has made great efforts at cost to them to make me feel safe at work. Out in the world and online, I no longer feel secure. I have been humiliated. I have never taken or exchanged nudes. However, because of this easily accessible technology, there are convincing graphic images and videos of me online for forever, and I have no idea where they are. I have reported this and turned over the evidence to both the MPD and the FBI, but unfortunately, as law currently stands, there is no path to justice for us. The Take It Down Act, a rare instance of bipartisan cooperation, isn't enough. The Take It Down Act still allows the creation of this abusive material. It is too easy for one person to use their phone or computer and these face swap tools to create convincing synthetic pictures, GIFs, and videos of you, your family, your children, or grandchildren. I do not understand why this technology needs to exist and find it abhorrent companies are allowed to make profits in this manner. I ask for your support of HF 1606 to hold these companies responsible and prevent harm to other Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, we are going to give Representative Hansen a chance to wrap today. And as we said at the beginning, we're laying this bill over and we're going to be doing some more work on AI topics. And we'll take member discussion if there is any at a future point in time with our conversation, because we do need to end so that the next committee can get in here. But Representative Hansen, before I give you the final comment, remember, members, if you'll pull your paperwork out and organize your folders, it just helps our staff, as I mentioned yesterday, on this. Representative Hansen, we'll give you the final comment today.
Thank you, Chair. And this bill will need to go to Judiciary, so if we want me, I can come up and answer questions at another time if we get a chance to re-refer it so that we can keep this bill moving and hopefully make it become law this year. So, members, I'll just wrap up by saying, you know, the dark reality of the world that we live in is that child sexual abuse material and other sexually violent AI-generated material supports one of the most profitable supply chains of commerce that reaches around the globe. And the Nudify feature that this bill seeks to ban allows predators to create content in mass to further increase their profits. And we can do something about it. So I hope you'll join me in helping to shut this down and make the internet maybe a little bit safer for all of us.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And members, with that, we are adjourned.